Hi, and welcome to the magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Ron Pariser. Today, I'll be reading from the March edition of Ask, Science and Exploration for Curious Kids. The front cover of the magazine is titled Sun Surprise and has an illustration of the sun. Page 2. Nosy News by Nosy Newsies. Ultimate hide-and-seek. NASA scientists recently announced that they may have spotted the most distant black hole ever detected. The supermassive black hole is part of the Oozy Galaxy, 13.2 billion light-years from Earth. To find black holes, astronomers check space telescope images for spots that are bright in high-energy X-rays. They spotted this one in images from the Webb and Chandra telescopes. Not only is it the farthest black hole found so far, but it could be proof of an outsized black hole. That's a black hole that forms when a massive gas cloud collapses, not just a single star. Until now, the possibility that a gas cloud might produce a black hole was just an idea. But the size and strong X-rays of this black hole fit how scientists think an outsized black hole would develop. The photograph's caption reads, "The Chandra telescope sees X-ray light revealing a bright source in this distant region of space." Rocking Cockatoos. Elvis says, "My love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June, and when I see her flying by, I beat a rockin' tune." Many smart birds use twigs as tools to poke bugs out of holes, but palm cockatoos have found another use for twigs, to make music. During mating season, male palm cockatoos try to impress females by drumming with a stick or seed pod against a tree. The birds make their drumsticks by snapping off branches and biting them into shape with their beaks. The birds all drum in slightly different ways, so scientists wanted to see if their sticks were just as unique. They collected 227 drumsticks the birds tossed after a performance. Sure enough, the twigs showed that each drummer had their own style. Some liked long, thin drumsticks, while others preferred to rock out with short, thick ones, and a few rebels beat with seed pods. Rock on. Marvin says, "I'll play the chorus." Starfish get a head. No matter their shape, most animals have a front end, the head, and a back end, the trunk or body. Even octopuses have six arms in front and two legs at the back. But what about starfish? Starfish have five long body segments with sticky tube feet on the bottom. Are some of these segments arms and others legs? Does each arm have a head and tail end, or do starfish do something different? To find out, curious scientists recently studied the cells of the starfish's arms. They looked for cell codes that get switched on when body parts form to tell cells what to be. But what they found surprised them. Starfish had forebrain and midbrain codes, but no body. So the starfish doesn't really have arms or legs. It's all head. There's a photograph. A starfish has tube feet on each arm. And another photograph, the starfish is thinking, who needs legs? Sisyphus says, so which one is its nose? I'm going to skip Nestor's doc and turn to page 6. The Surprising Sun by Liz Hoyuk, art by Dave Clark. The sun is not really a fiery chariot flying through the sky. The truth is much stranger. It's a star. Yes, our sun is a star, and all the suns are stars. Those tiny lights you see in the night sky are what our own sun might look like from some other planet far out in space. Like all stars, our sun shines so brightly because it is extremely hot. And like other stars, our sun is mostly made of hydrogen and helium, with a sprinkling of other elements. The sun looks so much brighter than the other stars simply because it's so much closer to us. Though the sun is pretty far away, 93 million miles, or 150 million kilometers, the other stars are much, much, much farther. Marvin says, Plush looks better the farther away she gets. Many things, like the sun, look very different seen close up, as seen by the magnifying glass on a bug. It's colossal and hot. It's difficult to get your mind around how completely ginormous the sun is. In the sky, it looks about the same size as the moon, but it's actually 400 times wider and 400 times farther away. So just how big is it? The sun contains 99% of all the mass in the solar system. A million Earths could fit inside the sun. It would take 108 Earths to stretch across the sun's width. At its core, the sun reaches 27 million degrees Fahrenheit, or 15 million degrees centigrade. In the time it takes to say sun, the sun puts out more energy than humans have used in all of history. Avery says, that's how big the Earth is compared to the sun. Zia says, wow, the sun is really huge. It's not solid, liquid, or gas. The sun is far too hot to be solid, liquid, or even gas. Instead, it's plasma, a really, really energetic form of gas, super gas. Plasma is the fourth state of matter. Think about water. When it's very cold, the water particles don't move much and the water is a solid. That's ice. Warm it up and the molecules have more energy and flow around liquid water. Make it hotter still and they jump around to make gas, steam. But if a gas gets extra super hot, the outer parts of atoms, tiny electrons, break loose and zip around free, making a kind of electric soup. This is plasma and it's the state the sun is in. You can see plasma on Earth in lightning, in the blue base of hot flames, and in plasma balls at science museums. Avery says, if that's lightning, where's the thunder? It's eating itself. The sun is not burning in the same way a campfire does. Stars make energy by atomic fusion, crunching hydrogen atoms together to make helium. This releases huge amounts of light and heat, but that energy isn't free. Every second, the sun turns 4 million tons of its mass into pure energy that it beams out into space. In effect, it's eating itself. But the sun is so fantastically huge that it would take 160 billion years for it to lose just 1/100th of its size this way. So we will never even notice it shrinking. Its light is old. Light starts as energy deep inside the sun, but it takes between 10,000 and 150,000 years for this light to work its way to the surface. It takes so long because the light has to bounce its way through the whole huge bulk of the sun. Once it gets to the surface, the light speeds off into space at, well, light speed, 186,000 miles or 300,000 kilometers per second. At that speed, it takes 8 minutes 20 seconds to reach Earth. So the sunlight you're seeing now left the sun about 8 minutes ago, and it was made in the sun's core back when mammoths roamed the land. It's really green. The sun's white light is actually a mixed-up blend of all the colors of the rainbow. But the sun's light is most intense in the range of colors we call green. In fact, that's why plants look green. Plants have trouble using the green wavelengths, so plants bounce most of the green light off. We see the reflected light and green plants. Its outer atmosphere is hotter than its surface. Why? No one knows. Surrounding the sun is a cloud of thin gas called the corona, which means crown. Astronomers were extremely surprised to discover that the corona is much, much hotter than the sun's surface. This doesn't seem to make any sense. Shouldn't it get cooler farther out? What's heating it? There are many different ideas, but for now, this is one of the sun's biggest mysteries. Maybe someday you can figure it out. In the picture, the sun's outer shell of gas called the corona is the spiky white ring that shows up around the sun's disk during an eclipse. A solar eclipse happens when the moon temporarily passes in front of the sun, blocking our view of it. In the cartoon, Plush Pottum is standing in front of the sun, blocking it out from Rasputin, who says, "It's a hippocalypse." Page 10. It has spots. Since ancient times, astronomers have noticed small dark splotches on the sun that come and go. Sunspots are not actually spots, but swirly areas of extra strong magnetic field. These hold back heat, making cooler areas that looks darker. The number of sunspot rises and falls on a regular 11-year cycle, mostly. Scientists are still trying to figure out exactly what drives this cycle, how regular it really is, and how it might affect Earth's climate. In the photograph, this is a close-up of a sunspot. Sunspots look dark because they are cooler than the rest of the sun. Zia says, "Why doesn't it try stripes for a change?" It makes the northern lights. Auroras, also known as the northern and southern lights, are rippling, glowing curtains of light that appear in the sky around Earth's magnetic poles. They happen when streams of charged particles from the sun hit atoms of gas in our upper atmosphere, energizing them so they glow like a neon sign. Different gases in Earth's atmosphere make the auroras different colors. The most common color is the green of glowing oxygen. There are two photographs. The first is labeled, "A rain of particles from the sun sets the northern lights shimmering." And the second, the International Space Station snapped a picture of the northern lights from space. Its energy runs our world. Most of the energy we use comes from the sun in one way or another. Solar panels can convert sunlight directly into electricity. You get energy by eating plants and animals that eat plants. And plants get their energy from the sun. Burning wood uses energy that the tree stored up from many days of soaking in the sun. Coal can be burned to make heat and electricity. Coal stores the energy of ancient plants, algae, and bacteria, which got it from the sun. A car gets its energy from gas and oil. Gas and oil also store the energy of ancient plants and algae, which got their energy from the sun. Wind turbines make electricity with wind power, and wind blows because air rises when it's heated by the sun. Water power comes from flowing rivers and tides. And what makes water evaporate, rainfall, snow melt, and rivers flow? Our old friend, the sun. One kind of energy that doesn't come from the sun is nuclear power, which splits large atoms into smaller ones to release energy. But even those atoms were once made by a star. Thanks, you surprising sun. The cartoons. Rasputin, while eating an apple, says, "Thanks, sun." Zia, while cooking over a fire, "Thanks, sun." And Bot, plugged in to charge, "Thanks, sun." Our Star by Elvis. You cannot land upon the sun. It's far too hot for anyone. But with a little help from art, we can peek deep inside its heart. The sun's hot core makes energy from hydrogen so we can see. Through the radiative zone, light and heat begin to roam. The convective zone looks like a pot, keeping the sun's surface hot. The bright photospheres, the place where light takes off and shines through space. When spiky jets of gas appear, we must be in the chromosphere. Satellites keep watch from afar on our energetic star. When the sun spits out white-hot flares, satellites in space beware. The sun has spots upon its face that come and go from place to place. These aren't dirt or clouds or measles, but tangled up magnetic fields. The corona floats all around the sun, a thin and gassy crown. A stream of electrons and their kin blow from the sun the solar wind. Watson says some of these rhymes are quite outrageous. And Avery says, I hope the rhyming's not contagious. Page 14. Where does the sun get its shine? Art by Thor Wickstrom. Written by Sol Liss. The question has puzzled people since the dawn of time. How do you do it? It's a secret. Long ago, people thought the sun must be a god. The god Helios drives his fiery chariot across the sky every day. Awesome! Giddy up, I'm late for noon. But eventually, they started asking questions. It's hot like a fire. It's bright like a fire. Maybe the sun is just a big fire. Oh, I like being a god. It's what you call a burning question. From ancient Greece until about 400 years ago, most scholars agreed that the sun was some sort of fire traveling around the earth. They spent most of their time arguing about how it moved. The sun is a hole in a huge hollow hoop stuffed with fire that circles earth. That's nuts. The sun, moon, and stars travel around on moving crystal spheres. I don't buy it. It's moved by angels. Sure, that makes sense. Then, in 1612, Italian astronomer Galileo used a new invention, the telescope, to take a closer look at the sun. He discovered that the sun had dark spots. Funny, I don't see any angels. I do see spots. Who are you calling spotty? What were these dark spots on the sun? No one knew. Maybe it's measles. In 1795, astronomer William Herschel suggested that the sun's bright shining surface might be a thin layer of glowing golden clouds. Sunspots could be holes in the clouds. Underneath, there might be a cool planet inhabited by sun people. It's cool and wet. I can see their swimming pools. Okay, Dad, I think you've been out in the sun too long. Marco Polo. In the 1800s, scientists figured out how to compute the sun's temperature, size, distance, and gravity, but that left them with even more questions. 93 million miles from Earth. A million times Earth's size, but only 333,000 times as heavy. Curious. It's too hot to be solid or liquid. It must be all gas. Hey, it's magnetic. When they did the math, they realized that no known fuel could produce as much energy as the sun beams out every day without being used up long ago or needing a much bigger sun. That was a problem. If the sun were made up of solid coal, it would burn up in 2,000 years. That can't be right. I think the Earth might be a bit older than that. So what else could keep a big ball of gas white hot for millions or billions of years? I say it's gravity. As gravity pulls the big gas cloud together, atoms bump into each other and get hot. Heat enough for a few million years easy, said Professor Helmholtz. Hey, don't squeeze so hard. Or maybe space rocks. Maybe the sun formed out of a bunch of fiery meteors smashing together. It's been cooling down ever since. That could take 20 million years, said Lord Kelvin. But the sun isn't rock, and this fossil is 500 million years old, said the pesky geologist. Some people wondered if maybe the sun was powered by elements not found on Earth, special sun-only superfuels that would burn forever. Or maybe the sun shines because it's radioactive. It's made of radium. I do not glow that color. Then, astronomers discovered a way to tell what elements something is made of by looking at lines in its light. In the sun's light, Celia Payne found mostly just hydrogen and helium. I spy with my little eye the same elements as Earth. You see right through me. Then, in 1907, the great Albert Einstein had a wonderful new idea. He didn't set out to explain how the sun shines, but he did. This formula means that a very tiny amount of mass converted into pure energy gives you a really huge amount of heat and light. E equals mc squared. What a bright guy. The last clue came when scientists realized that stars, like the sun, make helium by smashing four hydrogen atoms together. And helium atoms are a tiny bit lighter than they should be. One helium atom should have the same mass as four hydrogen atoms, but it doesn't. They should weigh the same. That's odd. I wonder where the missing mass went. The answer is sunshine. Every time the sun fuses hydrogen into helium, it loses a tiny bit of mass, and that mass, by Einstein's formula, turns into quite a lot of heat and light. I call it fusion. This can make energy practically forever. Good, because the rocks say this planet is 4.6 billion years old. Gravity got it started, and it glows because it's hot, but fusion is why the sun really shines. Hooray, I'm atomic, said the sun. Moon mischief. Hi, I'm the moon. You might have seen me up here in the sky. On April 8, 2024, parts of North America will see an amazing sight. The sun will go dark in the middle of the day in a total eclipse. What causes eclipses? Ask the moon. I make one full circle around the Earth every 28 days and a bit. That's what a month is. It's a moonth. There's an illustration showing the different phases of the moon as it circles the Earth clockwise. Here's a secret. I don't really change shape. I'm always a big ball of rock with one side lit up by the sun. You just see different amounts of my lit side as I orbit the Earth. At full moon, I'm on the opposite side of the Earth from the sun. People looking up from Earth see my whole lit up side. In my gibbous, half, and crescent moon phases, people on the Earth can see part of my lit up side, but not all of it. At new moon, I'm between the sun and the Earth. One whole side of me is still lit up, but it's facing away from the Earth, so you don't see me at all. Every once in a while, I get to play a great trick. Want to see me do it? Watch. I'm going to block out the sun. Once a month, at new moon, I pass the sun in the sky. My orbit is a bit tilted, so usually I go a little above or below the sun, and no one notices. But sometimes I pass right in front of the sun. Since we look the same size as seen from Earth, I can completely block the sun for a bit. This casts a moon shadow on part of the Earth below, causing an eclipse. I can only do this trick because just by chance I look about the same size as the sun in Earth's sky. Actually, of course, the sun is 400 times wider than me. It is huge, but it's also 400 times farther away. Bot says, round and round it goes. Marvin says, best prank ever. And Plush Potum says, has it started already? Get ready to eclipse. On April 8, 2024, my shadow will move across North America along this path. To find out exactly when the eclipse will start where you are, check your local news, greatamericaneclipse.com, or the NASA website, science.nasa.gov/eclipses. If you miss this one, don't worry. An eclipse happens somewhere on Earth about every 18 months. Some people travel to see as many as they can. Hurry or we'll miss it, says Marvin. My shadow is round like me. The long path shows where my shadow will move as Earth turns. Places in the dark band will see a total eclipse, but each place will only be in the shadow for a few minutes. gear up. Before Eclipse Day, get yourself a pair of Eclipse glasses. These are paper glasses with silver eyepieces that are very dark. Ordinary sunglasses are not enough. You won't be able to see anything through Eclipse glasses except the sun. But with them, you can watch the moon move slowly in front of the sun. Looking directly at the sun can hurt your eyes, so it's important to have Eclipse glasses. You can get them at planetariums and many other places where an eclipse is near. Eclipse Day. If you are in the path of totality, you'll get to see an amazing sight. The eclipse officially starts when you can first see a bit of the moon shading the sun. It usually takes about an hour for me to move completely in front of it. I can't wait, says Marvin. As long as any bright part of the sun is showing, keep your eclipse glasses on. Through the glasses, you will see what looks like a bite being taken out of the sun. As more and more of the sun is blocked, the light will get a bit strange. Colors will look faded. Birds and insects start their evening songs. It will get dim and cool like evening, and then totality. If you are in the path of totality, at some point the moon will completely block the sun for a few minutes. That's the total eclipse. Enjoy the moment. The sun's corona will appear like a white glow around the black disk. The corona is only visible during a total eclipse. Take off your glasses. It is safe to look at the eclipsed sun when it's completely behind the moon. If you look around at the rest of the sky, you might see some stars. As soon as the bright rim of the sun appears again, put your eclipse glasses back on and watch the sun return. More eclipsing. Sometimes at full moon, Earth casts a shadow on me, and I get eclipsed instead. That's a lunar eclipse. Luna is me, the moon. And sometimes I'm a bit farther from Earth, so my shadow leaves a thin ring of sun showing during an eclipse. This is called an annular eclipse. Predicting eclipses. To people long ago, eclipses were often mysterious and terrifying. But ancient mathematicians in Greece, China, and many other places noticed that the eclipses repeat in long cycles. Once they figured out the patterns, they could predict the next eclipse. Different cultures invented different kinds of math to spot the eclipse patterns. Some worked out when the orbits of the Earth, Moon, and Sun would line up to cause an eclipse. Others counted days on calendars and found patterns in the dates and places of eclipses in the past. Then they worked them forward. During a lunar eclipse, the moon looks dark red. That's because even though I'm in Earth's shadow, I still reflect a little sunlight. The eclipse clock. Ancient Greek inventors built clockwork calendars to predict the motions of the sun, moon, and planets. One of these devices was found in a shipwreck and rebuilt. Turning a knob to a future date moves gears around to show where the sun, moon, and planets will be on that day, and reveals future eclipses. This is a reconstruction of the 2,200-year-old Antikythera machine. The hands show the sun, moon, and planets. Maya mathematicians in Central America figured out how to predict eclipses. The black and white symbol at the top is their sign for an eclipse. Is Earth slowing down? Modern scientists have discovered something else from old eclipse records. Earth's orbit is slowing down, just a tiny bit. They figured this out because actual eclipses listed in ancient books were in slightly the wrong places if the Earth and Moon had always been orbiting at the same speed as they are now. The dates and places only fit if Earth was spinning a tiny bit faster back then. What's causing the slowdown? The moon. My gravity tugs a bit on the Earth, acting like a very weak brake. More mischief. On page 23, make an Eclipse viewer. This is something you can do with your parent, teacher, or guardian. Hey, bring back our sun! Eclipse Legends, retold by Carrie Clickard, art by Jesse Tees. Long ago, people around the world made up different stories to explain what caused eclipses. Here are four myths the vanishing sun inspired. A tale from the Pomo tribe of North America. Where does a gigantic supernatural bear walk? Anywhere he wants to. One day, Sky Bear was strolling along his path, headed for the Milky Way, when he bumped into the sun. They quarreled and blustered until, "Move! No, you move!" Bear took a bite out of the sun. And the land went dark until sun grew the bite back. A tale from Japan. Sun goddess Amaterasu was crowned ruler of the sky. Her little brother, the storm god Susanoo, wasn't happy. "Why can't I be king? Because everyone likes me best." Susanoo set out to make his big sister miserable. One day, when Amaterasu and her sister were happily weaving, Susanoo tossed a horrible skinned horse into her room, ruining his sister's mood and the tapestry. Furious, Amaterasu stalked off into a cave and she took the sunlight with her. "I'm never coming out. Ever." It took a committee of gods and their sneaky tricks to coax her out again. A tale from Korea. Gamak Nara, one of the many heavens, was a dim, gloomy place. Not even the king liked his dreary land. So he summoned his gigantic fire dogs. "See that flaming ball in the sky? Fetch!" But the sun was too hot even for the fire dogs. They sulked home with burnt tongues and empty paws. Bad doggies, no treat. Still, the stubborn king refused to give up, and every time his fire dogs play fetch, were stuck in the dark. A tale from Tahiti. La'a, the sun god, and Marama, the moon goddess, were madly in love with each other. "I burned for you. You're the light of my life." The more they were together, the brighter La'a shined. His fiery love dried up the sea and scorched the earth. Soon, La'a was too hot to handle, even for Marama. Ouch! So La'a walked east and Marama walked west, never to meet again. But never is a long time. Every so often they sneak off for a kiss, and while their love blazes, earth has no light at all. Louis, the Sun King, art by Sue Blanchard. Louis XIV became King of France in 1643 when he was just 4 years old. Shortly after, a group of powerful noblemen rebelled and kicked him off the throne. He grew up in poverty and hardship. When he finally retook the throne, he swore it would never happen again. But how could a short, skinny 14-year-old king make himself the boss of a country full of sullen, rebellious nobles? Louis built a magnificent new palace at Versailles and made all the nobles live there so he could keep an eye on them. And he reinvented himself as a new kind of king, the Sun King. In 1653, he appeared at court in this amazing costume made of gold cloth and decorated all over with jewels and suns, wearing high-heeled shoes to make himself look taller. The message was clear. Louis would rule France the way the sun ruled the sky. Absolutely. With no questions from anyone. And he did. But look out for eclipses. Zia says, "XIV, that's a funny last name." And Bone Pony replies, "That's the Roman number 14. He was the 14th king of France named Louis." Elvis says, "Couldn't they think of any other names?" Ask with Sage and Briar. Briar says, "Evelyn in Ohio wants to know, why do dandelions taste bitter and gross? Do all flowers?" Sage replies, plants can't run away from their enemies, but that doesn't mean they're defenseless. To avoid being eaten by insects and animals, some plants turn on their chemical factories. They fill themselves with potions that make nibblers sick or taste so bad they leave the plants alone. Dandelions' main enemies are beetle grubs that chew on their roots underground. "Hey, quit it!" "Mmm," says the grub. Our milky sap, called latex, contains defense chemicals that keep root-eating insect larvae away. Dandelions have thick, deep roots that store energy for the plant and send up new flowers in the spring, so the dandelion needs to protect them. These don't-eat-me chemicals are what you taste in dandelion stems. Their molecules fit into bitter sensors on your tongue's taste buds, like a key fitting into a lock. When one fits, the tongue sends a bitter message to the brain. Many plant poisons trigger the bitter taste, so bitter can be a warning. Marigolds, nasturtium, some flowers are good to eat, daffodil, but some flowers are poisonous, deadly nightshade, and some plants are completely poisonous all over. But bitter doesn't always mean poison. Defensive chemicals give many healthy veggies, like broccoli and kale, their superpowers, and a slightly bitter taste. Some people can even eat dandelions, though usually the new leaves, which are not as bitter as the stems. And some people taste bitter flavors more strongly, so they may not care for kale. Breyer says, but I say, better a bitter bite than the biter bit. Ask us anything. Write to us at Ask 1 East Erie Street, Suite 525, PMB 4136, Chicago, Illinois, 60611, or have your parent email askcricketmedia.com. The next few pages are contests and letters, which you can do with your parent, teacher, or guardian. That's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I have been reading from the March issue of Ask, Science and Exploration for Curious Kids. I'm Ron Pariser. So long until next time.